I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
The best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, CM Jew, and this is episode 29. Yes, I almost still can't believe that we made it 29 episodes, considering all the stuff that's going on this year. I've got a lot closer. I'm gonna get a lot closer to 52 episodes in a year than I thought I would. I realized that I would probably miss a couple, but I thought school was tight and all that jazz. But so to get to 30 episodes, it seems I'm going to get to by the end of this year. Considering that basically started 2 months into the year, and all that we miss, I'm actually pretty amazed myself with. Anyways, enough of tooting my own horn. Back to this episode. On this week's episode, we continue to look at the epic feud that was Flair versus Rhodes in the 1980s that capitalized on Starrcade 1984 and Starrcade 1985. Last episode, we looked at Starrcade 1984. So in this episode, we are taking a look at Starrcade 1985. And, you know, I had my hang-ups going into this, mind you, because after watching Starrcade 1984, that didn't really, it didn't really captivate me, and really, it didn't really leave an impression on me, you know. Mind you, I heard TWK talk all the time about, oh, how much better Starrcade was than WrestleMania in the early days. I don't know if I believe that. Because again, my first, I've seen 83 and 84, and, 83 kind of impressed me. By no means did I think 83 or 84 were better than the first WrestleMania. But this was 85, the same year as at least WrestleMania 22. WrestleMania 2, so I guess I can compare it to that. Though it's probably a lot more closer. A lot more closer to 83. I mean, to WrestleMania 3, I would have to look that up. But in comparison to WrestleMania 2, Starrcade 1985 is the better one, if by all means it is the one I am thinking of. Checking right now. No, WrestleMania 6. So, yes, still comparison with the very first WrestleMania, which I would say this is on the same level as the very first WrestleMania. This is definitely a better pay-per-view than the first two Starcades I watched. Of course, 83 didn't have as many matches as this and 84 did. But both the ratio to good to bad matches was uneven in the favor of bad matches. So I did have my hangups. I'm like, will 85 really change my mind? And I am very thankful to say this was, at least in my mind, a much better pay-per-view on 1985 is than the Starcades of 83 and 84. Like I said, this continued the feud between Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes. You know, there's also another interesting thing to look at this history-wise, as they would soon form after this, but a couple weeks or a month, couple or 2 months earlier, and in this match, we saw the makings of what would become what is considered one of the greatest factions of all time. And the Four Horsemen, with Ole and Arn Anderson, the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, coming to Flair's aid against Dusty Rhodes. You know, interesting enough, also, there's a lot more feuds that I got where the feuds were coming from. And I guess stars, somewhat because I saw them in 84, to where I now have more of a semblance of them. So maybe 84 also helped the fact for 85, because you know some of these stars. Like the Koloffs. I mean, I believe I've seen Ivan Koloff before in a pay-per-view I did this year, where it was the Battle Bowl pay-per-view, I think of 92? Was it Battle Bowl? No, it wasn't Battle Bowl. It was, darn it, it wasn't War Games. It was called something else. I can't remember. But it was the pay-per-view I did. I know it was 92, where it was Dangerous Alliance against Sting Squadron. I can't for the life remember which pay-per-view that was. but I've seen him there before. But like Black Bart, Ron Bass, who, I mean, I had heard Ron Bass, but I'd never seen him wrestle before until the last episode. Things like Raging Bull, Manny Fernandez. I had not seen it, but now I had seen them wrestle, so they weren't that unusual. I'd seen them before. Same thing with Jimmy Valiant. I've seen him now twice before this pay-per-view. And you also had other teams which I had seen before, so I had some, you know, like the Midnight Express and the Rock and Roll Express. This is my first time seeing Ole and Arn together, but I had seen Arn wrestle before, so I was experienced with him. You had Chief Wahoo, Superstar Jimmy Graham. There's a lot more with this match, with the list of wrestlers, including actually my first time really ever watching one of the matches, as there's another great feud that is a part of this Starcade, and that is Magnum T.A. versus Tony Blanchard. In any case, this match was an I Quit match in a steel cage. So, to get to see their epic wars, which I had heard so much about. I mean, we're talking about a feud that made... I remember WWE came out a couple years ago with the greatest, the top 25 feuds of all time. And this made the list. Can't remember if it was 25 or top 20, but I definitely remember there was a top feuds DVD, and this made that list. So they finally get to see a match as a part of that feud. So, you know, it's very interesting to see. With 1984, I didn't feel like I knew a lot of the wrestlers. I didn't know a lot of the storylines, but I felt like I knew a lot more of the storylines here. And I think that's also has to do with, I think, they did a better job presenting, or at least the wrestlers did a better job of presenting storylines and emotions and everything. This is the height of the 80s style of Southern wrestling. Again, their backs were against the wall. Not the height. The height was the 70s, really, especially the late 70s. Late 70s, early 80s, this was mid-80s going into the late 80s, where this was towards the end of the NWA, so yet not seeing anything else but these Starcades. This was, I think, one of their best. And I know I have a very limited scope on which I can judge, but, you know, from what I've seen. So, let's sit back and let's get into the review proper, because I'm just wasting for time. Like, yeah, how much longer can I stall till I have to get to the review? Because again, we have no news. We talked about everything we wanted to talk about in the last episode where I reviewed NXT Revolution, and I talked briefly on the big news of Punk joining the UFC. I did talk about TLC. By the way, watch Tribute to the Troops tonight. Yeah, fuck you, Vince. Fuck, I mean, you had a... You're gonna have Koloff there. Rusev there lose the scene, aren't you, you goddamn fucking motherfucker? We all know it's coming. And when I, the C-Nazi, am going to groan at that, you know you have a problem. So, anyways, and it's, by the way, the sad part of that is everybody's going to blame it on Cena as well. Anyways, let's get to our pay-per-view proper. The NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance, proudly presents Starrcade 1985, The Gathering. Taking place on November 28th, 1985, at the Greensboro Coliseum in Greensboro, North Carolina, and the Omni at Atlanta, Georgia, with a combined attendance of 30,000. They watched, as I come down here, 12 matches. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Starrcade 1985. He's just a common man, working hard with his hands. He's just a common man, working hard for the man. Hey, he's a American dream. Hey, he's a American dream. If you're black or white, redneck, funky, that's alright. Blue-eyed with a lot of soul, common man has got his gold. Hey, he's a American dream. Hey, he's a American dream. Welcome back. You're just a common man. And we're gonna common man boogie. You can see what I did there. Through this pay-per-view. Now, something that I'm going to actually bring up as I go into each match, I will bring up where each match is, because as I made mention before, Starrcade 1985 actually takes place in two locations. At the Omni in Atlanta, and Greensboro Coliseum in Greensboro, North Carolina. So I will save the match, and then I'll say where it took place, or I'll say that, do it that way, or I may, you know, when I switch, like, going over to this location, we have our next match. So, we start off in the Greensboro Coliseum with our first match of the evening, for the Vanket, that word just snuck up on me, NWA Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship. We have Khrushchev versus Sam Houston. Oh, I was looking at a citation in my notes. We to get sidetracked. I thought this was a very good opening match. Like the opening match in 84 where know, though in that case it was for a junior heavyweight title. There you had a much more of a high flyer versus a more technical guy. Here it's a straight up, it's power versus speed type of match, which can always be enjoyable if done right. And these two do it just right. Sam Houston uses a lot of speed and flies around a lot until Crusher gets a hold of him and then like just drills him into the mat. And Sam Houston does a great job selling that. And I think that's another thing. I think this pay-per-view, and I'm going to say it straight out, that I think they did that was so much better than 84. It kind of dawned on me while watching this that they were doing a lot better job selling, I think, than they did in 84. Because, like, people were getting hit with things and just standing and everything and taking everything and popping up from shots to where they should at least stay down for a little bit longer. Here, the wrestlers did a much better job in selling. Sam Houston sold the hell out of the flapjack that he got from Khusev. I do like the opening. Again, I'd be very interested in watching what would happen between these two wrestlers afterwards if they continue the feud, because it was a bit of a funky ending. All these Starrcade matches seem to have funky endings. I think that's where WCW really shot itself in the foot, is they have a whole lot of shenanigans. And I know shenanigans are part of matches, but it just seems like it happens a whole lot more in WCW. But in this case, Houston does hit the Bulldog, but Khusev gets his foot on the ropes. Then you see one. Khusev hits the Russian sickle on him, which is basically a clothesline, pins him. Houston gets his foot on the rope, but the referee doesn't see it, and Khusev is your new Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Champion. We then go over to the Omni in Atlanta, where we have Manny Fernandez versus Abdullah the Butcher, being managed by Paul Jones in a Mexican death match. Now, you would think that Mexican death match, you know, death matches are usually hardcore matches and would end by a result of a pin or submission. Nope, not in the NWA / WCW. Oh, no. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you a pole match. That's right, it's a pole match. And not just any pole match, because, you know, Manny is Latino, you know, and apparently he's feuding with Abdullah on this. It has to be something Latino, which means a better name for this match is a no rules, no disqualification, sombrero on a pole match. I fucking kid you not. Or as Ireland would say, I shit you not. But it's called a Mexican death match, but this is a pole match. The object is the first competitor to grab the sombrero of Manny's heritage off the pole wins. But they can do whatever they want to each other. And by whatever they want, I mean, it's very early on, Manny the Raging Bull Fernandez takes off his freaking cowboy boot and starts bashing Abdullah the Butcher in the head with it till Abdullah gets it, and a good half of the match is them bashing each other with Manny's fucking boot. Like, am I really watching what I think I'm watching? Mind you, it did get a little bit better. They actually did some maneuvers in the second half, including counter where apparently Manny hits Abdullah with what Tony should. By the way, I think I forgot to mention, your color commentary team is Ball Codrett and Tony Schiavone. Gordon Sully apparently was out. Interviewing this time was Johnny Weaver. The referees were Sonny Fago, who I think we can essentially say that Sonny Fago is one of the worst wrestlers I've ever seen, because every time I see him, he's always involved in some type of goddamn controversy as far as missing something. Stuart Schwartz, Tommy Young, who would do the final event,
And of course, everybody's favorite referee, Earl Hebner. And wouldn't it have been ironic if Earl Hebner was the pin referee as part of that match? It's like, this is another controversy as part of Earl Hebner. Your ring announcer, by the way, is Tom Miller. But back to the match. The reason I bring up Tony Schiavone is apparently when he hits with a counter, which is apparently called, I shit you not, the Flying Burrito. I fucking groaned when I'm like, really, South? Really? Look, I understand you're the South and you have your own lifestyle. Trust me, I'm from Florida. I consider myself Floridian because I lived there for 20 years. But God fucking damn it, South. Really? The Flying Burrito for a flying forearm smash? Fuck you. Look, I am not exactly Mr. Sensitive by any means. In other words, I could give a damn about political correctness and sensitivity. But there's political correctness. You know, there's being too sensitive about things, and then there's just, holy fuck God. Did anybody think? I mean, then again, this is not as quite as bad as apparently Ole Anderson coming up with the idea to book the Colonel debuting with Harlem Heat with them in chains. Which was like, which got the superstation mad at them. Or as Michael P.S. Hayes put it on the Legends of Wrestling episode, which I'm referring to, they finally realized that Ole started smoking dope. Literally, I went through the whole thing just to get to that, by the way. Yeah, he hits with the Flying Burrito. I can't say that with a straight face. Then he hits, I guess, a flying clothesline off the second turnbuckle. Goes for a flying splash, misses. Gets to the corner. Abdullah tries to hit him, but he sidesteps, and Abdullah goes into the ring post and goes out of the ring. And then he gets up and gets the sombrero. So it did get a little bit more interesting towards the end, but like I said, you know, the combination of half the match, them hitting each other with a freaking boot, and also just, I literally rewinded on the network like 3 or 4 times because I just wanted to make sure I heard Tony Schiavone says, he hit him with the Flying Burrito! I'm like, ugh. I'm crying here, man. I'm crying. We go back to Greensboro Coliseum for our next match, where we have Ron Bass versus Black Bart with James J. Dillon in a Texas Bull Rope match. Now, of course, and because I had watched the paper before, I knew these people, and I knew they were tag team, so I at least had some I could figure out that, okay, at some point, one turned on the other because one was gaining too much success. You know, the classic, you know, tag team turmoil thing. And you have two Texas boys, so they have a Texas Bull Rope match. And if you've seen one Texas Bull Rope match, you've seen most of them. It's a strap match where two people are strapped to a strap and they can't get away from each other and they hit each other with a strap a lot. Or in this case, Ron Bass beats the shit out of Black Bart with the fucking cowbell. That, with that being said, I did fucking enjoy it. It's like, God fucking damn. And a lot of these matches, people were cut. Like, I thought Survivor Series 2003 had a lot of fucking blood. Holy fucking shit. I'm like, motherfuckers are bleeding from the bell rings and they start bleeding. I'm like, holy fucking shit. That being said, I did enjoy it because it's a Texas Bull Rope match and it's just brutality. It doesn't pretend to be anything else, which I like. I like when there's a match that is about brutality and doesn't pretend to be about fucking anything else but brutality. And in this case, I do like the finish of the match where Ron Bass had to get up on at least the second turnbuckle and come crashing down with the cowbell on Black Bart. I mean, literally to a point, a lot of this match was them bashing each other with a fucking cowbell. Now, there was a stipulation to the match that if Ron Bass won, he would get a extra Texas bull rope match of 5 minutes with James J. Dillon. What I like about this is that James J. Dillon showed a great character here. As far as his character being evil and maniacal, that he was ready in case Black Bart lost. And as soon as he lost, he jumps Ron Bass. I love the psychology here, and starts beating him down. And he puts the strap on, it goes on, and it gets to a point to where, you know, he's choking him. Like, Ron Bass is like, fuck this shit, and just, like, gets up and looks at J.J. Dillon like, you motherfucker. At that point, J.J. Dillon tries to run, and Ron Bass just yanks on the bull rope, and J.J. Dillon fucking down. And he starts beating the holy hell out of him. I'm like, I love this storytelling here. I really do. It's stupid and simple, but I enjoy it. I guess this tells you a lot about me as a person. But again, I also do like that, you know, referee gets knocked down and Black Bart comes in and hits the pile driver on Bass, which gives James J. Dillon the win. It's a great heel win for him. And obviously their feud more than likely continued. With that, we then move back over to the Omni in Atlanta for our next two matches, both with the same people. As superstar Billy Graham faces the Barbarian with his manager, Paul Jones. I find it interesting, like, the two big managers in the NWA were Paul Jones and J.J. Dillon, or at least that's what it seems to me. And you did have each one at each venue, with Paul Jones being in the Omni and J.J. Dillon being in Greensboro. Of course, J.J. Dillon was also one of the managers for Tony Blanchard as well, so it makes sense. And he's also for Buddy Liddell, or Buddy Liddell the Nature Boy, which, considering what happens after this pay-per-view, I'm interested to see where that partnership went. I take it go far. Anyhow, back to the match in hand. It's superstar Billy Graham versus the Barbarian with his manager, the Paul Jones. Now, the first part of the match is an arm wrestling match. Basically, the stipulation was that Billy Graham and the Barbarian were going to have an arm wrestling match, and then they were going to have a regular match with a 30-minute time limit. Billy Graham ends up defeating the Barbarian. They say by disqualification, but he had the Barbarian's arm down, so I want to say technically he won. But like right after he won, Jones hits him with the cane, and then the match starts. And then Billy Graham defeats the Barbarian by disqualification because he has him in the bear hug. And then Paul Jones comes, hits him in the back with a cane. So it's very short because the arm wrestling match is about 2 minutes long, and then the actual match itself is about 3 minutes and 2 seconds to be technical. You had much longer matches at Greensboro. It seems like a lot of the big, like, longer matches did take place in Greensboro, where the much more shorter matches. Because it seems like, with the exception of the championship match, which happened at the Omni, all the other matches were under 10 minutes. Whereas at the ones at Greensboro, you had three that were over 10 minutes. Very short, and was part of a storyline involving superstar Billy Graham and the Barbarian, and I really had no interest in this, and didn't impress me either way. After these messages,
we'll be right back. Well, hi there. This is Huckleberry Ham. And when I'm not busy making movies or TV shows, I enjoy listening to my favorite internet radio show, Two True Freaks. They got all sorts of shows for y'all to listen to, covering all sorts of geeky topics. Star Trek, Star Wars, cartoons, scary movies, folks eating supper, music, giant monsters, and one feller who buys stuff at garage sales. And the funny books. My word, the funny books. Old funny books. New funny books. Scary funny books. Movies about funny books. Funny books about movies. British fellers talking about funny books. And lots more. So why don't you check these fellers out? Head on over to twotruefreaks.com and tell them Huckleberry sent you. Two True Freaks, chock full of great podcasts since 2008. Sounds great, Mr. Hound. Thanks for coming in today. Oh, no problem, fellers. Now, if y'all'll excuse me, I have to run. I'm shooting a movie. It's a Western, and if y'all see Quick Draw McGraw, don't tell him. He's still hot at me about the good, the bad, and Huckleberry Hound. And once he gets all El Kabong, he's a pain in the you-know-where. And then there was this one time that he and Baba Louie had a little too much sarsaparilla, and Quick Draw said something to McGilla Gorilla that I won't repeat, you understand? We were shooting Yogi's gang, and things got mighty tense. Boo Boo, and Boo Boo's a great feller, real sharp, love working with him. Boo Boo kept it all from Yogi, you understand? But boy, I tell you.
TwoTrueFreaks.com. Tell them Huckleberry sent you.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going up.
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu. The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
Greetings, podcast listener. Do you like...
Gotcha, Mom!
Or maybe...
Dragon Flame!
How about...
Tetsuo! Anino!
Or...
In the year 1999, an abandoned alien battle fortress crash-landed on the planet Earth. Our most brilliant scientists and engineers spent the next 10 years reconstructing the damaged ship and studying its highly advanced space technology called Robotech.
Do you remember...
Our Star Blazers!
Or this?
The year is after Colony 195. As the world constantly changes in the chaotic era, there are two mobile suits that could turn humans into the ultimate weapon. The Wing Zero, and the Epion.
Or maybe even this.
After the desire for blood rules all, the only hope left is the one they call D.
Or this.
Gene, grappler ship's dead ahead!
It wouldn't be fun otherwise! Let's do it!
Or...
If Cardis is allowed to be reborn, she'll destroy Marmo as well as Lodos!
Or have you seen the latest episode of...
And just like that, everything changed. At that terrible moment, in our hearts, we knew. Home was a pen. Humanity, cattle.
If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out Anime Freaks, hosted by Dr. Bill Robinson and me, Gene Hendricks. Anime Freaks is a monthly podcast covering all things anime. It is available at twotruefreaks.com. And on iTunes under Two True Freaks Presents Anime Freaks.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman.
Superman.
Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
The Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast,
The Schuster Herald Podcast,
It's Superman,
The Kara Zor-El Podcast,
The Armored Hero Steel, a John Henry Allen Podcast,
The World's Best Podcast,
and
Radio KAL from SupermanHomepage.com.
Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weider,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Sam Rizzo,
Danny Sapp,
Matthew Epps,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
With that, we move back to Greensboro for our next match for the NWA National Heavyweight Championship. We have Buddy Liddell, the Nature Boy, the so-called True Nature Boy, versus the champion, Terry Taylor. Yeah, no. The Rooster. also the man of the new millennium, Terry Taylor. And among other things, was part of the American team. If this takes place in 95, that means, like, this takes place in November, did I say? I believe I said, oh yeah, November. I guess it's enough time for him to come back to the NWA, because if this took place in 1985 when WrestleMania happened, Because I'm thinking of the fact that he was teaming with Barry Windham as part of that USA team that would face the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Koloff. Anyways, you know what? This is a really good wrestling match. Solid wrestling for both. This is definitely one of my favorite matches of the evening. And I like the ending as well. I thought the ending was really well done. At some point, James A. Dillon comes out. You know, he had to get his head taped from the, the bull rope match. He was busted open. Because, like I said, the bell rings and people start bleeding. And he came out to cheer Buddy Liddell, and he does eventually get Evolve. I love the fact that, again, I guess Terry Taylor's finisher here was a superplex from the second rope. And, James J. Dillon is able to trip him and cause Liddell to fall on him and get the 1-2-3. So I do like the ending there. Of course, you have a new national heavyweight champion. And like I said, great, just overall, just a great wrestling match. I do like the sort of, like I said, I do in this case like the heel ending, because again, it's a good manager move to help his heel get the win. There's just not much more to say about that. It's just a really solid wrestling match. Moving back over to the Omni, we have our next match, which is a tag team match for the NWA National Tag Team Championship. We have the Minnesota Wrecking Crew of Ole and Arn Anderson versus Chief Wahoo McDaniels and Billy Jack Hayes, who, when I initially saw him, I kept thinking he was, I'm blanking on his last name. I want to call him Matt. Doink the Clown, basically. I apologize that I'm blanking on his last name. Because he was a great wrestler. First name was Matt. I originally thought that Billy Jack Hayes was him, but he's not. This is a really solid tag team match. And this is my first instance to see the Minnesota Wrecking Crew. Now, mind you, understand that my views of the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, I'd never seen them before at work as a tag team, though I'd seen Arn Anderson. But they were also kind of tampered by... I have watched a lot of the Legends of Wrestling on the WWE Network. And I watched the one where they talked about tag teams, and they talked a lot about the Minnesota Wrecking Crew. So I was very interested to see the first match and to see, again, what I guess today would be classic tag team maneuvers of keeping the opponent in your corner and using simple maneuvers to wear them down. So again, just I think a solid tag team match. The Wrecking Crew did a great job playing the heel. Whenever McDaniels or Haynes would get tagged in, they would bring a spark in, and just they kept the momentum all through the match, and just a solid tag team match. Of course, the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, the only criticism I have of it is that the match ends with a second trip, and what I mean by that is there's a point towards the end where McDaniels comes off the rope and Ole trips him, and Ole attempts to pin, doesn't get it. Then they go, McDaniels pushes Anderson into the Wrecking Crew's corner, and Ole trips him again, and this time holds onto his leg, and they get the pin. And I'm like, two trips in a row, and the referee doesn't see it? I'm like, I know the referees are blind, but damn. That's kind of unbelievable that doesn't get caught. So that's the only criticism I can have of it, but outside of that, it's a very solid tag team match. We go back to Greensboro Coliseum for our next match, and this is actually the second longest match of the evening, and damn, this was a good one. We have an I Quit Steel Cage match for the NWA United States Heavyweight Championship as Magnum TA faces the champion Tony Blanchard, who, of course, with his manager Baby Doll. These two just went straight at each other and were pulling hair, and it's like this was just a brutal, brutal match. And again, to see this feud really for the first time. I talked about how these wrestlers sold like crazy and really sold well. This is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. You felt the emotion, and you, even though I'd never seen the storyline and only have heard about it, I immediately knew it because I felt the emotion. I felt the hatred these two had for each other. Again, it's one of those things where I remember talking to TWK about, if somebody's never seen the feud before, if they put the right emotion, they can completely understand the feud. And this is a great example of this. Even though I had heard about the feud, I had really never seen the feud. And yet, I felt I could understand everything that the feud was about by just watching this match because of the emotion and the way they sold the feud in this match and just the brutality of them trying to make the other say, I quit. And this match was brutal watching them going back and forth. And then, the ending with the broken chair to where, Blunt's is trying to basically shove a broken chair piece in Magnum TA's eye. I'm like, holy fucking shit. Now, okay, when this came up on the network, it was rated TVMA for violence. And I'm watching this throughout the paper, I know I'm seeing a lot of blood, but damn. I don't know if I would call this TVMA. And then we got to that part where it's inches from his eye, it earned its TVMA rating. and then of course, Magnum TI counters and then uses the chair to get Tony Blanchard to say, I quit. I like this match because, again, the brutality, but more importantly, the emotion that these two wrestlers told really sold the match for me. Of course, after such an intense match, we need a cool down match, a fun match to prepare us for the two main events. In this case, it's the Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant, and Miss Atlanta Lively with Big Mama. Now, for those who don't know who Miss Atlanta Lively is, he's Ron Gervin, who would, in I think 2 years, challenge Ric Flair for the World Heavyweight title. And they would facing the Midnight Express of Bobby Eaton and Dennis Caudry with Jim Cornette. Now, what is an Atlanta street fight? Well, it's a come dress as you are, anything goes street fight. And Miss Atlanta Lively starts off the match by going straight to Bobby Eaton and squirting baby powder in his eyes, in his face, and his body. I knew Southern wrestling storylines were funky, but damn. I'm like, I don't want to hear the NWA or anybody say anything about Gold Dust anymore when you have Miss Atlanta Lively. I'm like, that's an ugly woman right there. I mean, I knew it was Ron Gervin because I did my research ahead of time. I'm like, that's an ugly motherfucking woman right there. I'm like, people are wondering who Miss Lively is. There's a secret she's hiding. I'm like, no fucking shit. It starts with the fucking Adam apple, you motherfucker. Here's an idea. Kick her between the legs. If she falls a certain way, you know it's the fucking man. I mean, really? Really? Were children this fucking stupid that they could not see that, oh my god, you have a man dressed as a fucking woman? But I digress. It was a fun, out of control, a lot of funky weapons used match in the case of purses and baby powder and other things. And of course, Jimmy Valiant, he's the wild man, he's all over the place, and he boogie boogie boogie. I don't know what I feel about the ending, because on one hand I want to like it, and on one hand I don't. The ending comes where Caudry has Miss Atlanta, or has Jimmy Valiant up, and Eaton goes to the top, and he's gonna like basically come down with an axe handle, and out of nowhere Miss Atlanta Lively comes out of nowhere, like just straight up punches him, and like just knocks him the hell out. On one hand, I want to like it because he knocked the motherfucker out. On one hand, it's like, really? This is how it's going to end? But at the same time, this is just supposed to be a fun match to get the crowd hype and keep the momentum going for the main events. So, with that, we move on to our next match of the evening. We have, back at Greensboro Coliseum, we have the Rock and Roll Express of Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson. With their second, Don Kimodal. Again, he's come back for the same opponents, because their opponents are Ivan and Nikita Koloff. If you remember 1984, Don Kimodal was the second for Ole Anderson and Larson when they faced the Koloffs. But they are facing the Koloffs for their NWA World Tag Team Championship. And now, of course, the Koloff second is the new Mid-Atlantic heavyweight champion, Gustav. I love this match. I love watching the Rock and Roll Express do just classic tag team wrestling back and forth. And there was two key momentum swings. You know, momentum started with the Rock and Roll Express, then it went to the Koloffs, and then at some point, the Express was able to turn it back around and get the win. It was a great... I don't want to call it a back and forth, because it didn't have these back and forths. There was really two switches in momentum. But at the same point in time, it was a really solid match, and it was a great textbook example of tag team wrestling from both sides. The wrestlers did a great job telling the story, and just solid wrestling. This is my favorite match of the night, or at least it's in the running to me, because we haven't talked about Flair and Rhodes yet, have we? I just realized that. I'm like, wait a minute, I just put that out there. Maybe I should pull that back. So, just a very great match. And if you wanted to see a good Rock and Roll Express match, I think this is a perfect example of what they were about. So, of course, your new... I love the ending here to where, you know... what happened? I'm blanking away. I'm trying to remember. It was Ivan and Nikita... One of them hits the backdrop on Gibson, but Morton pushes him in the cage and rolls him up against the three. And then, of course, the Koloffs and Kusevs start beating the hell out of them till wrestlers come down and clear the ring. But your new NWA World Tag Team Champions, the Rock and Roll Express. Which leaves us for our final match of the evening. Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, versus the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. This was just a great match from front to back. I kind of like their entrances, the fact that they're standing there and they're waiting for, like, okay, you can go. And, you know, Kent coming through the crowd. And, of course, Ric Flair, he has, and, of course, they have pyro here and everything. They saved all the pyro for this match. and you know what? The first thing is, immediately, it felt like it was this, like, big match event. Or big match feel. And that's, like, the immediate difference between this and the 1984 match that I feel, is that the 1984 seemed like an extravaganza. It seemed more like a show than a match in a way. Almost like a special attraction. This felt like a world heavyweight fight. Okay? This had sort of that same feel of Mike Tyson versus Evander Holyfield, or Ali versus Foreman, or Floyd Money Mayweather against whoever. You know, it had that big fight feel to it. Which I think immediately raised it up tenfold, and Rhodes and Flair did not disappoint. This was just a great wrestling match, had a lot of back and forth. There would be no stopping for blood in this one. And again, I love the ending. The roll-up win, you know, Flair, I think he's got one over, goes for a suplex, and he's rolled up. 1, 2, 3. I just wish I didn't know that basically the shenanigans that would happen to Matt. Basically what happens is the referee gets knocked out, and he gets up just in time to see Ole and Arn Anderson coming to interfere. But before he can call for the bell, Dusty Rhodes takes care of Arn and, like, rolls him out of the ring. And after that, that's when Ole hits him with a knee to the back. Flair covers, and a referee comes in but doesn't get the three count. He goes for a suplex, it rolls up in 1, 2, 3. They would later say to take the belt away from Rhodes because they said, well, I had disqualified Flair because of the interference, which I just think that's stupid. It was. It was just stupid. It was part of a continuation of the storyline. I think if that... And I think this is part of my criticism of the rivalry. They had Rhodes finally win it at the Great American Bash. I think that was a mistake. This should have been the payoff. I think if they did the payoff here and then had a rematch down the line where it gained it back, and then Rhodes won it back at the Great American Bash, that would have been better. Because, again, it was... You needed the big payoff here. And, again, I am agreeing that put the Flair title back on Flair before putting it back on Rhodes, but it should have officially happened. And it's just a shame that I think Rhodes got a title reign stolen from him because they said it was disqualification. But like I said, this match from front to back was just solid. You know, great ring psychology, great ring technicians from both Rhodes and Flair. Both used the figure four. Again, the use of the jab and the motions by Rhodes are just classic. It's classic Dusty Rhodes. This match was a joy to feel. And you know what? This match was worth the wait through the other 11 matches. And the thing also that I really like is that up to the sixth match, the matches were okay, and they were more like show matches and extravagances and everything. But starting with the Bobby Liddell-Terry Taylor match, you had these championship matches that all build off each other. You had the Bobby Liddell-Taylor, that was good. And then you had the Minnesota Wrecking Crew versus Wahoo McDaniels and Billy Jack Hayes, which is better, and continued the build. You then had Magnum TA versus Tony Blanchard. That was just incredible, was better, and continue the build. You had a bit of a cool-down match to give people a slight break, but it wasn't too long that the momentum was lost, and you had the Rock and Roll Express and the Koloffs have a match that was just as good as Magnum TA and Tony Blanchard, and continued the momentum and continued the build, and it all built to this main event match between Rouge and Flair, and it gave it this big fight feel that was just wonderful. And, you know, this is why I kind of pulled back on calling the Express versus the Koloffs the best match of the night. I think this is. So, just a great match. So, I guess it's time for final ratings on this pay-per-view. I guess, first off, let's talk about top three moments. The Flying Burrito by Manny Fernandez. No, I'm not that horrible. Moment number one, Ron Bass coming off that rope, that second rope with the cowbell and just, like, knocking Black Bart the hell out. That's moment number one. Number two is the Rock and Roll Express. It's flying maneuvers. They were just a beauty to watch. I'm just going to package all of them together. But for me, the moment of the night was definitely that scene, that almost driving of the broken chair into Magnum TA's eye. And because that was like, there was so much story told in that one little moment. It's like, I have to give it to that. As for my top three matches, it's not quite the final three matches of the night, but if you take out the Jimmy Valiant, it is. Number three is Magnum TA versus Tony Blanchard for the NWA United States Heavyweight title. The Rock and Roll Express versus Ivan and Nikita Koloff for the NWA World Tag Team Championship. And of course, Dusty Rhodes versus Ric Flair for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship is number one. At the end of the day, this pay-per-view was so much better than 84 and 83 because it was an extravaganza, but the main event matches, the championship matches, built off each other and built towards the main event. And there was this momentum that was just carried all the way to the end of the night. And there was just a lot of emotion going into that main event, and it was just a joy to watch. A lot of great solid wrestling from the championship matches, the fun matches, and the rivalry and the feud matches did their job as well. At the end of the day, this is a textbook example about how a pay-per-view should be run front to back as far as booking is concerned, of how you book a pay-per-view and how you book a big event, and, you know, how you, for the most part, get a lot of payoffs. Because there were a lot of payoffs in this pay-per-view. While, again, I can't judge these payoffs on the fact of whether they would have been reversed or whatever, as in the case of Rhodes and Flair, but you got a lot of payoffs, at least at the time, that made you feel good. So, a solid pay-per-view. I give Starrcade 1985 a 4 out of 5. It's a really good pay-per-view. I've only seen a few pay-per-views from the 1980s so far, and of them, this is one of the best I've seen so far. It's right up there with WrestleMania 1. I have seen WrestleMania 2, even though I haven't reviewed it yet. I may this year, or I may not. Anyways, I do think that this was better than WrestleMania 2. So since this is between the two WrestleManias, I think this is as good as WrestleMania 1, but better than WrestleMania 2. WrestleMania 3, that's a completely different story. So, yeah. 4 out of 5, a solid pay-per-view to watch, and I think a great example of NWA wrestling towards its end. At its best, mind you. So, that is it for this episode of CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. If you have any comments of any kind that you want to leave me, please feel free to leave me them. Remember, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can contact the show at through our email address, which you can do by sending emails to absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132 supermanfan@gmail.com. You can also leave us comments on our Stitcher and our Facebook accounts by going to those sites and searching for The Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there. And you can always leave us a comment on our website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're at 132productions.com, make sure you check out all the other Absolution Network content that, of course, includes Shin Dagger Curl and his wrestling and anime videos, Jan Ramosos and his voice acting, and I called him Jan Ramos, didn't I? John Ramos, excuse me, and his Super Sentai and Tokuchu and voice acting videos. And, of course, my Tom's Prerogative podcast, my Tom's Top 10, and, of course, the Intergalactic Graphic Review podcast that I do with my co-host Edwin. Also, make sure you check out my other comic book podcasting site, which features the Comic Book Crazy group of podcasts, Hexcast, the only podcast dedicated to reviewing every issue of Jim Bilen's Terror Witch of the Black Rose, and, of course, Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, don't forget to check out my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. Of course, while you're at any of the sites, make sure you check out the sidebar where you can find all our friends. This, of course, includes Matty J, TWK, and the WrestleCast, which you can find at ReviewTopia.com. Along, of course, with our friends Michael Bailey, who does Views of the Long Box, and From Crisis to Crisis, with his good friend Jeffrey Taylor. Of course, he has a big event coming with another good friend of mine, Scott Gardner, who does 22 Freaks Podcast Network. They have a mini-series as part of their Tales of the JSA podcast, where they're going to be going over the entirety of Crisis on Infinity Earths. I personally can't wait to listen to that. Also check out my good friend Spidey Dude and the Clone Saga Chronicles. And last but not least, Steven Schleicher and the Major Swords Podcasting Network, another good site you should check out. So that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. We are done with Starrcade. We covered two, and we covered the Rhodes Flair feud. Now it's time to go back to WWE for the last part of December. And next week, we take a look at, well, we take a look at Armageddon 2000. A Armageddon that gave us an epic Hell in a Cell filled with six people. Those people being Kurt Angle, the champion, Triple H, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, Undertaker, and Rikishi. It is a Hell in a Cell that no one will ever, ever forget. So next time on CMG's Wrestling Reviews, we have Armageddon 2000. And until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CMG. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you, yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, bring me down to negative vibes. I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. Stand among two feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and through the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of through the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. What's this feeling? My love will be for holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life, but you're dreaming.